Hello and welcome to this week's Boxing News podcast, The Opening Bell. I'm Boxing News editor Tris Dixon, joined today by senior writer Matt Christie. As always, how's it going, Matt?
Yeah, not too bad.
So last week, I had a lot of criticism for not holding the microphone close enough. So let's work on that. If I slip up, just please remind me. But on a more serious note, we had a massive fight for the super bantamweights last weekend that you watched on TV live, as did I, Nonito Donaire against Guillermo Rigondo. And last week you were going to put your cheeky fiver on a Donaire win in the 10th round. So what did you make of it when
I nearly wet myself in the 10th round. It was Rigondo had been putting on a masterclass up until that point, and it was as if a switch at last suddenly went on in Donaire that he couldn't keep allowing Rigondo to fight like that. And he came and he landed a good shot, but it was arguably the best punch of the fight, but it was his only real, you know, just a few seconds of success for the entire fight. I thought the fight was a lot wider for Rigondo than the scores, and certainly the American commentary that I was listening to, I thought was, well, I didn't really know what they were watching, to be honest.
Were you surprised at how the fight turned out?
No, it wasn't surprising, but I mean, I think we'd all gone for, I think all the BN team had gone for a Donaire win, I think citing professional experience and quality of opposition at that level. But it was one of those fights that once it was about three rounds old, you kind of thought, yeah, why didn't I go for Rigondo? Why didn't I go for Rigondo? Because it was clear that he was going to win that early for me.
It was, it's all very well being wise after the event, but I mean, two or three of us said it was going to be exceptionally close, didn't they? And it sort of could have gone either way, but there were a lot of people outside of the Boxing News team picking Rigondo, so it's not going to go down as one of the year's massive upsets, is it?
No, I think you could class it as a minor upset just because Donaire was favourite, but it was one of those results that it wouldn't surprise many people, and there were so many people picking Rigondo, and obviously with good reason as well.
What has divided opinion was whether it was actually a good fight to watch or not. Some people saying it was a boxing masterclass by Rigondo, others saying that he just ran and he's going to be a nightmare to sell, including promoter Bob Arum, who I've quoted in my column in this week's magazine, saying that, you know, he's an 80-year-old master salesman, has now got to try and sell a master boxer. It shouldn't be that hard, but it's going to be quite difficult, isn't it? I mean, first and foremost, what were you entertained by the fight?
I was entertained. I would think twice about showing it to someone who was new to boxing. I think if you're experienced in the sport, then you appreciate what was going on there. It was a masterclass.
It's one for the connoisseurs.
Completely, it was a masterclass, and I would argue with anybody who says otherwise. I accept that it wasn't as thrilling as, say, Bradley Provodnikov, which took place a few weeks before. But for me, no, I was enthralled while I was watching it. I mean, I wasn't, apart from that moment in the 10th round, when I thought the cheeky fiver was going to multiply dramatically, I wasn't on the edge of my seat. But, I mean, you have to admire Rigondo for what he did. I take Bob Arum's point in that, for the most part, blood and guts and what have you sell. But Rigondo, he'll always sell tickets because people will want to watch that, but the demand is not going to be huge to see his next fight, I'm sure.
What is going to be his next fight? I mean, he's just beaten the top guy. Yeah. You know, and the size difference looked incredible in the ring on the night. Donaire looked massively bigger. So you can't imagine Rigondo going up anytime soon, and he's just beaten the best guy in the division. I mean, what happens next?
It's difficult. I think he's at an age now. I mean, we said it last week, and I'm still curious as to how much longer he's got left. He's 32. I know he hasn't had that many. He hasn't got that many professional miles on his clock, but he's got. He's went through some long roads at amateur level, so he's at a stage now where he just every fight needs to be a big fight for him. He doesn't need to be making voluntary defenses unless it's against a big name. But I don't know what could he go up and fight someone like Mahrez? Would that sell? Would that be an interesting fight? I think he'd box Mahrez's head off, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think Donaire would handily beat Mahrez, it's another one that's going to be massively affected by this Cold War, isn't it? Between Top Rank and Golden Boy, you know. I mean, it's slim pickings when you for Rigondo, even if you've got got the choice of everyone in and around your weight class, let alone when it's restricted with promotional squabbles and what have you. So Rigondo's entered our pound for pound listings on the website. Are you surprised by that, or do you think he merits it?
I think he merits it just by beating Danaire. Danaire was widely, some people were putting Danaire at the top of their pound for pound lists. Danaire universally was in the top three. If you come in and you beat somebody who's, and Danaire was there on merit. You look at his record, look what he's achieved. Barely lost a round going into that fight at that level. So for Rigondo to beat him that handily, of course he deserved to be in the top 10.
I remember when I first met Danaire 2 or 3 years ago in Las Vegas. It has to be the most extravagant hotel suite I've ever been into. I think he was staying with someone who, a Chinese man or a man from Japan who he referred to as his godfather. And he was paying extortionate amounts to stay in this tremendous suite that had, you know, everything, two floors, balcony, windows that covered, you know, both floors so you could look out onto the strip. And, you know, there was a bar in there, proper bar, not a mini bar. There was a pool table upstairs. You know, everything was operated by remote control.
Sounds rubbish.
And ended up playing a game of pool with Lenito and having a couple of beers with him. And funny enough, it was just him and I, and we were just talking about his future. And one of the fights he mentioned that he wanted then was to fight Puerto Rican Juan Manuel Lopez. And now that looks like it's a real possibility now, even in defeat. I mean, at the time, there was 2 or 3 weight classes dividing them. I thought it was stupid talk, you know, maybe his first beer was kicking in. But as it turned out, you know, it could go ahead in Puerto Rico. I mean, that's a really good fight, isn't it? It's a real make or break fight now as well.
Yeah. I'd really like to see that. I'd be interested to see where Danaire goes now, actually. I certainly think he can come again. I wouldn't advise him to go in there with Rigondo again. Rigondo's—he looks almost impossible to beat when he's at that level. But Danaire, yeah, Lopez, well, yeah, be a good fight.
There's been a lot of speculation, and let's just finish up on this Danaire Rigondo fight. There's been a lot of speculation that Danaire wasn't in the right headspace, hadn't prepared properly. Do you think that was the case, and do you think that made any difference to the outcome?
It may have been the case, but I mean, it's very rare that a boxer will be 100% for any fight. And, you know, a lot of the time, you know, they can win these fights. We don't hear about the excuses. When they don't win, that's when the excuses come out and we hear this, that, you know, all these other reasons. Yeah, arguably, but I don't think it would have had a bearing on the result.
Okay. So last week we mentioned that the 100 greatest fights of all time, Booker Zine, has come into the Boxing News shop. It's available online. This week, in support of that Booker Zine, we've launched a T-shirt range, 5 custom-made limited edition T-shirts that cover the top 5 fights from our 100 greatest fights of all time. They've just check out the Boxing News Shop, www.boxingnewsshop.com. Have a look at them, Matt. We've got a massive weekend ahead of action. We've got Daniel Herbert going to New York to cover Tyson Fury, Steve Cunningham. We've got Kieran Mulvaney ringside for Saul Alvarez against Austin Trout. We've got Paul Wheeler going ringside for Nathan Cleverley, Robin Krasniqi, and Andy Whittle in Blackpool to watch the latest fights of Brian Rose and Lee Selby. If you could go anywhere this weekend, where would you go and why?
I'd go to New York. No, I wouldn't actually. I've changed my mind. I'd want to go and watch Alvarez Trout.
I mean, why do you think this fight has captured the imagination? I think they were seating the Alamo Dome for 30,000. I think there's going to be 35,000 in there. They've had to extend it. Unless the Klitschko's fight in a big stadium this year, then it's going to be the biggest attendance for a fight I can see this year. Why do you think this fight's captured the imagination, Alvarez Trout, the way it has?
I'm not sure with Trout. I mean, he's coming off the best result of his career when he beat fairly handily, beat Miguel Cotto. But there's so much buzz around Alvarez. He has kind of got that X factor about him that he could go places. And I've got so much respect for Alvarez for taking this fight because It's no gimme. It's a really, really finally, tough fight.
He was due to step up at some point, wasn't he? I mean, he'd beaten Mosley, yeah, who was about 60. He'd beaten, yeah, guys who weighed about 8 stone when they turned pro.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm being a little bit harsh, but, you know, Josecito Lopez, Matt Hatton, Mosley, I think his last 3 fights. You know, it's a big jump between those guys and Trout, isn't there?
Yeah, it is a huge jump. But I mean, I thought that he'd end up fighting somebody like a Mayweather. That would be his jump. And you could understand that, the financial rewards, the, you know, the potential acclaim he could get from winning a fight like that. But the fact he's stepped up and he's fighting Austin Trout is one of the most difficult guys to beat in and around that weight class, if not the most difficult to beat. Full respect to him. Full respect to him.
You think there's a chance the Cotto win for Trout made him look better than he actually is? And this is me being a cynic. It's not me necessarily believing that, but there was a lot of people saying before Cotto fought Mayweather last year that Cotto's best days long gone. He'd had a lot of hard fights. He had another hard fight with Floyd. You know, that it was all going to catch up to him one day. And if he couldn't get motivated for a fight, and I don't think he would have had the same motivation to fight Austin Trout that he would have had for Floyd Mayweather. And it was all just going to get on top of him once. Maybe that Mayweather fight was Cotto's big last hurrah. And Trout just picked out what was left.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I think there's no, if that Cotto-Trout fight hadn't happened and Trout had gone straight into this fight with Alvarez, you wouldn't see anybody picking Trout to win this. A lot of people are making a lot of the fact that he beat an aging Cotto, whether it's a completely past it Cotto, I don't know. But yeah, I completely agree with you there that Cotto wouldn't have been. I would say out of all the guys he's fought over the last few years, he'd found this one really, really hard to get up for, Austin Trout. That's no disrespect to Austin Trout. At the same time, Trout is really, he's a good boxer. And I think he's got the style to potentially win this. What happens out there in Texas, goodness only knows. It's a bit of a lottery, isn't it? Which is a shame. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Trout was to win. In fact, I'm still kind of swaying on the fact that I think that he may win this. I may pick Trout to win this.
Is that how you go? Trout to win on points in Texas? Get a decision.
That's the thing, and that's you know, if I think that Trout, I mean, what are the odds for Trout to win on points, for example?
Win only for Trout. You can get him at about 2-1 as a 2-1 underdog with Sky Bet, Tote Sport, Betfred, Bet Victor, and one or two others. Some people, William Hill's having a slightly more slender underdog at 7-4. And other prices, 15-8 is a popular one, 13-8 elsewhere as well. So some people are calling it a very close fight, but Alvarez is the favourite. And obviously, I think you do have to factor in the things that you said, that, you know, he's younger, arguably has more ambition, even though Trout must feel like he has a point to prove and a point to prove that the Cotto win was no fluke. But I just think, that Alvarez is going to get the rubber of the green over there.
I think he may get the rubber of the green. I'm also wary that perhaps we're all making a similar mistake to what we made last time in picking against the slick boxer. So that's kind of, I'm aware of that. None of us have had a good time on the Boxing News Prediction League just lately. So I don't know. But
one of Alvarez is known for his body punching, as a lot of Mexicans are, but he's also got a very good right hand that he drilled Shane Mosley with a lot of the time. That's going to be a crucial weapon against Austin Trout, yeah, isn't it, Southpaw?
Yeah, completely. But I think what you were saying earlier, in Alvarez, yeah, he's beat Mosley, and he hasn't. The guys is other than the guys that have been at their peak, or they've been closer to their peak, like your Hattons and your Ryan Rhodes. Again, no disrespect to those guys, but they're not really elite top five in the world type guys, are they? And I think it's going to be. It'd be fascinating to see how Alvarez gets on against a live opponent like Trout.
If Trout's not as good as we think he is, and there's plenty he brings to the table, natural size being one of them, then the prices for Alvarez to wear him down and stop him late are attractive. 22-1 for round 10 with Ladbrokes, 28-1 round 11, 33-1 in round 12. Tempted?
No. No, I think it's going to go the distance. Trout's pretty tough. I can't see Alvarez.
Do you think, even though he's scored 14 knockouts and 26 wins, Trout has the artillery to keep someone like Alvarez off him?
Maybe not necessarily off him to win the fight.
But enough to stay out of harm's way.
I think it's going to go 12. And I think if the odds for Alvarez to win on points, 11 to 8. Trout to win on points, 9 to 4. 9 to 4 is fairly long odds for Trout if you've got a few quid. It's tempting. But like you say, out in Texas, it's a lottery, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. So where would you go? Where would you decide then? Alvarez on points, reluctantly somewhat, or you'd stick with Trout on points?
I'd stick a fiver on each of them to win on points.
Well, you may as well go for the draw as well then, Matt, haven't you? 25 to 1, the draw. It's your favourite, isn't it?
Strange things have happened, haven't they? Yeah. Strange things have happened.
Yeah, okay. All right, so...
I'll try and be a bit more conclusive with the rest of these fights we're talking about.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to go with a popular consensus of Alvarez on points. Could be controversial, and my gut instinct says that he's going to win a very, very controversial decision. Best result for Alvarez, I think, would be a late stoppage. I think that would be a massive statement, and it would really get the ball rolling for a massive fight with Floyd Mayweather later on in the year, which we're led to believe is a possibility. I mean, this fight, Alvarez-Trout, was supposed to be on the Mayweather-Guerrero undercard on the 4th of May, but Alvarez decided to take the show on the road once Mayweather wouldn't guarantee him a slot on his September show. Or he wouldn't guarantee that Alvarez wouldn't be in the opposite corner in September when Mayweather is due to fight again, should he get past Robert Guerrero. So plenty of food for thought. Interesting fights ahead. And there's also a very interesting fight in New York. Now, Tyson Fury is a big favourite in more ways than one to defeat Steve Cunningham. But it's not as simple as it looks, is it?
No, it's not. I think this is Fury's toughest test yet.
Tougher than Kevin Johnson? Would you say Steve Cunningham's better than Kevin Johnson?
I would say he's more motivated than Kevin Johnson. We've never seen Cunningham do anything less than give 100% in every fight that he's been in, win or lose. The same couldn't be said for Kevin Johnson going into the Tyson Fury fight. We've seen a non-effort, really, against Vitaly Klitschko a few years ago. So we knew that Johnson could go into his shell. So, yeah, I believe that Cunningham is a tough test. I'm not convinced it's... It's as hard as some people are making out. But yeah, in terms of where Fury is, let's remember, what is he, 24? 20 fights? It's a good developing fight for him.
So you've been in touch with Camp Hay to get David Hay's opinion for this fight. And
yeah.
He sort of drew parallels between his fight with Nikolai Valuev for Cunningham. Do you see the similarities apart from the obvious?
I think Cunningham is going to be. The thing is with Cunningham is that he's a pretty big, he's a tall cruiserweight. He's always used to people being smaller than him, so he's going to have to adapt to having this huge guy with him. So yeah, I think there are similarities in that respect, but in terms of Cunningham's not a puncher like Hay is. Fury isn't as static and cumbersome as Valuev. So, no, I think it'd be a different fight to that. I don't think we're going to see a fight like that, but I think it was interesting reading what David Hay had to say about how Cunningham would go about business.
Do you think Hay would have beaten Cunningham?
Yeah.
Do you think Valuev would have beaten Fury?
No, I don't care. Wouldn't want to see that.
No, who do you think would have won that, Fury or Valuev?
Fury.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'd pick Fury, yeah.
What, to outscore him?
Yeah, to win on points, and it'd be horrible.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Okay. But with Fury Cunningham coming up this weekend, I mean, do you think it will affect Tyson at all fighting in New York with the spotlight on him, or do you think it's something he could revel in?
I think it will affect him. I spoke to him last week, and he was really relaxed, really chatty in his hotel room in Canada. He's well aware that this fight is going to be watched by millions all over the world. I think it's on NBC in America. Got a really good slot there. It's on terrestrial over here. Bear in mind that you know, the world has been starved of heavyweight fights in recent years, in terms of we can't just turn on the TV unless we've got Sky or Box Nation or whatever to see them. So he's well aware that all eyes are on him. He wants to make a statement. I think, as a result, he could be a little bit nervy early on, because he'll be wanting to impress. He'll be wanting to impress in every minute of every round. So I think that could be a factor.
What price underdog would you have Steve Cunningham in this two horse race?
If it me 3-1, 4-1.
Yeah, the prices for Cunningham are generally 4-1 and 5-1. The most popular bet, according to Odds Checker, is Cunningham to is Cunningham at 5-1. People are putting money on that.
Yeah. I mean, he's worth a punt. I think I've got some odds here. For Cunningham to win on points is 6-1. That's a feasible conclusion to
he could matters, fiddle his
it?
Way through and frustrate Fury and use his movement exactly. And pot shot a little bit, couldn't he?
Yeah. That, to be honest with you, that result would surprise me. But 6-1 for Cunningham to win on points. Yes, decent bet.
Where's the safe money then? Fury to win on points?
I think the general consensus is Fury's going to win on points. I think Fury could stop him. My thinking behind that was Cunningham is slick, but he'll get into a war if there's one going. He's been hurt.
He's Philadelphian, hasn't he? At the end of the day, exactly.
Yeah, and he's been hurt in a lot of fights. He's been down in a lot of fights. It's not like Fury isn't. Isn't the concussive puncher that perhaps we thought he was in the early days, but he can certainly whack, and you've got to wonder how Cunningham's going to cope with that, because he's been in with what Jason Gavin and Thomas Adamek at heavyweight.
Yeah,
they're not big heavyweights. They're not like Tyson Fury. So I think ultimately at some point, probably in the second half, that Fury's going to catch up with Steve Cunningham.
Cunningham as well, 36 years old, but he is a veteran. There is a chance his legs might not be as strong and fit as they once were.
No, I think I agree. I think there were signs of that in the later stages of his cruiserweight career.
I would have thought against Juan Pablo Hernandez, I thought there were signs he was slowing up a bit, and maybe that's had something to do with him putting on the weight as well and moving up to heavyweight.
Yeah, very possibly. And I think we were talking about guys being flattered by certain results. I think perhaps Cunningham may have been flattered by. Even though he lost the fight, it was a fight he clearly deserved to win against Thomas Adamek last time out. Adamek, let's face it, he's seen better days.
I think he won't be the same since the beating he took at the hands of Vitaly Klitschko.
No, and he's been light heavyweight, cruiserweight. He's had a long career. Adamek, very underrated through large parts of his career. I thought you could make a case for him being in the pound for pound rankings because of what he's achieved. This is going back a couple of years. But anyway,
hard fights, every stop at light heavyweight, whether with the Paul Briggs fights, then at cruiserweight, and then at heavyweight. He's had so many tough fights, hasn't he? And I think that beating from Vitaly Klitschko was probably the last straw.
Yeah, it was. He's still a name. I mean, there's still a lot. They're still trying to discuss a comeback opponent for David Haye. There's various names flying around and various
Adamek
names
would
rejected.
Be perfect for him, really, wouldn't
and
they?
That was what I was just going to say. Yeah, Adamek would be perfect. And do you know what? Even if Adamek is kind of on the decline, it would still make for TV friendly warfare, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, a little bit closer to home, we've got Nathan Cleverley, who's finally back out. He's got his date against mandatory challenger Robin Krasniqi. It's obviously not a fight that's really got Nathan's juices flowing, but it's a fight he has to take if he's going to keep the WBO belt. I think, you know, we do keep politics out of this, so let's not go on about the rights and the wrongs of the WBO making a match with Robin Krasniqi, and assess the fight for what it is. I mean, Cleverley, probably one of the most underrated boxers on these shores, don't you think? Especially for everything that he's done at such a young age.
Yeah, I think he's a world champion. He's had the world title now for a couple of years, 18 months, something like that. And he's taken stick because of the opponents that he's fought. But how old is he? 25?
Yeah, 25 or 26. he's got time on his side.
Yeah, what he's achieved, and considering a lot of fair portion of his career was the early days was shared with getting a university degree. So he's only really been doing the sport full time for a few years. What he's achieved is nothing short of phenomenal. How far he can go, I don't know. But cleverly, nice guy, really nice guy, good fighter. I think we should, definitely we should get behind Nathan. It's difficult to get over excited about this Krasniqi, but if there wasn't a world title involved, and if you look at their respective records, and you look at what Cleverley's done to this point, it's a fair fight. It's a decent fight for him. Let's not go back to the whole WBO thing, WBA. But Nathan Cleverley, Krasniqi, it's a decent fight, and it will take him, if he wins, it will take him to the next level.
I do think, I mean, a lot of people are looking past Krasniqi, who's not a massive puncher. He's got 15 stoppage wins in his 39 victories. I think people could be overlooking Krasniqi a little bit. He's fired up, always in great shape. And just because he's not a massive puncher doesn't mean he's not going to be in there pitching. I think he's going to be in the top three or four people that Cleverley's fought. I think you could put him below Bellew. I think you could put him below Kara Murat. And possibly one or two others. Maybe Danny McIntosh. But he's going to be, he's probably, like I said, probably about the third or fourth best that Cleverley's fought, don't you reckon?
Yeah. I think you'd put him third. I think you'd put him beyond the first two names you mentioned, Bellew and Murat.
And both Bellew and Murat gave Cleverley good fights, and Cleverley makes for fan-friendly fights.
Yeah, I think this fight's going to be worth watching. I mean, Krasniqi, okay, he hasn't got the star appeal of someone like Bernard Hopkins, but that doesn't mean it won't be a good fight. Cleverley's rarely in a bad fight. His style almost demands excitement, and it often makes for two-way combat when you'd think he could box a bit smarter and win the fights easier. That may come with time. But I'm fully expecting Cleverley Krasniqi to be a decent scrap.
I think part of the problem for Krasniqi is that he's not a massive puncher, but Cleverley's shown to have a pretty rock solid jaw so far, hasn't he?
Yeah. I wouldn't be picking Krasniqi in this fight. It would surprise me if Krasniqi took Cleverley's title.
Mm. And I think the interesting thing about Cleverley, what's so interesting is early in his career when he was a super middleweight, when he was coming through on Joe Calzaghe's undercards, everyone was saying that he was sort of the light hitting product, of the Calzaghe gym, and then he moved up to light heavyweight where I think he fought Tony Oki first, if I'm not mistaken, and he was really impressive, and he outscored Oki as Oki was as tough as old boots, and no one really stopped Tony Oki, but it was after that that he really sort of found his dig, and he sort of grew into light heavyweight, and although he's got only 12 early wins from his 25 victories, he's become more of a puncher at light heavyweight, I think.
Yeah, he is. He's kind of fine. I think the term that people use is like man strength, isn't it? And I think he's found that as he's progressed. And I think it's unfair to question his punching power. He's shown it in recent years. And I don't think a stoppage this weekend is out of the question, a stoppage victory for the Welshman.
Interesting, the trainers this weekend, when you look at Fury, who's trained by his uncle, and Nathan, who's trained by his dad, Vince. It's good thing or bad thing to have flesh and blood in the corner?
It's a good thing when you're winning, isn't it? It's the obvious example is Joe Calzaghe. That worked fine. That worked well, more than fine. It was a dream partnership, wasn't it? I think if things start to go wrong, the thing is Calzaghe never lost a fight. But if things start to go wrong, it must put a strain on relations. It must put a strain. Look at Floyd Mayweather Senior, Floyd Mayweather Junior,
who are back together again.
Back together again, yeah. And some of the stuff that we've seen of their relationship, it's vile, really. The way that they've spoke to each other, it's not what you want to see as father and son. To the question, if it works, why change it, basically? So I think at the moment, Fury nor Cleverley have reached a point in their career where they seriously need to sit down and think, okay, well, let's change trainers. if Cleverley gets up, if Cleverley's beaten by Krasniqi this weekend, or if he goes off and fights Hopkins and is exposed, then perhaps that would be something to address.
Cleverley is a massive favourite. Just for the record, he's a 1-8 on 1-9 with some with Sky Bet, 1-10 with Bet Victor. Krasniqi, you can get longest odds I can see with Ladbrokes, who've priced him at 6-1.
Yeah, that's pretty long. It's not long enough for me to
tempt you.
Yeah, no, I just can't see that he'd win this weekend unless something freakish occurs.
Okay, interesting. So Matt, also back in action this week, heavyweight Derek Chisora. You've covered a lot of his career. I remember you went out to Finland to see him fight Robert Hellenius. Tell me a Derek Chisora story.
I remember when I went to do, and some boxing news readers may remember the feature that came of this day of utter chaos. it was all prearranged that I was going to spend the day with Derek and interview him. But when I arrived, there was already two or three camera crews. One from one was from Germany, and they were just basically just spending the day following him around with the camera. He spent the entire day playing up to the camera, and I think I spent about 10 minutes, 10 minutes actually interviewing him, and that was when we were going from one shop to the next. And the thing is, the public at that point, I think it was just before the Vladimir Klitschko fight, which didn't happen the first time. Probably didn't really know who he was, but they could see he was being followed around with the camera. So I've spent the majority of my day telling them, because they're all like, "Who's that? Who's that? Who's that?" Like, "Derek Chisora. Who's Derek Chisora?" So I was kind of explaining who they were. Eventually, I think it was Frank Warren's son, Francis, said, "Okay, look, we'll let's sort this out. Let's sit down and have an interview with him." Derek was nothing. He was polite to me all day, but he was just being Derek Chisora. So I arranged to then meet him underneath the London Eye. And I sat there for, I think I was supposed to meet him at 3:30, so I made an effort to get there for 4 just to make sure I didn't miss him. 5:00, I was still sat underneath London Eye, and it was absolutely freezing that day as well. And on that particular occasion, I never did get to interview Derek Chisora. I've interviewed him several times since, and yeah, he's a complex individual. Sometimes he'll happily have a chat, and other times he looks through you like, you know, you're a piece of. But anyway, but having said all that, I do follow Chisora's career. I like him as a boxer. I like what he does in the ring. He's not going to be an all-time great, but the way the heavyweight division is, how much longer the Klitschko is going to be, for me, you know, Chisora could win a belt in a few years down the line. And I think the good thing with Chisora is that even though perhaps he was rushed into certain fights early on, he's learned, and he hasn't taken, against when he lost to Klitschko, he didn't take a sustained beating. When he lost to David Haye, okay, the ending was a little bit gruesome, but before that, he wasn't getting beaten up. And I think these are all learning experiences for Derek, and I think he'll be a better heavyweight for it.
He's had a quite staggering gauntlet of fights, hasn't he? He doesn't perhaps get the credit he deserves for the fights that he's been involved in and the challenges he's taken on.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't get the credit. He doesn't get the credit he deserves. I think he was his own worst enemy against Tyson Fury, and he was out of shape. But against Robert Hellenius, that was a decision he should have got. He absolutely boxed Hellenius' head off. Should have got that decision. And against Klitschko, everybody was like, this is a mismatch. Could go 2 or 3 rounds. Klitschko's going to knock him out. He went the distance. And he did well. He took some rounds off Klitschko as well.
Gave him his toughest fight in a while, yeah. So at 29 years old, 15 fights. It's astonishing he's had his record's 15-4. I mean, he's a better fighter than that, isn't he, Chisora?
He is a better fighter than that. Yeah, he is a better fighter than that. I remember when he was coming up and he was kind of knocking guys out, and he just knocked out Danny Williams, and I think that was for the vacant British heavyweight title at the time on the undercard of Mitchell
and Cassidus, yeah.
Upton Park, yeah. And at that point, he looked like a pretty solid, you know, looked like he was going to be a bit of a knockout artist. And I think with the incredibly how much steeper his competition has got since then. He's found he kind of knows that he's not this knockout artist, and he's having to adapt his game to that. But that's not to say that he's not a potent puncher, because he certainly is.
Okay, now briefly, there's some cracking fights around the country, around Britain this weekend. three that I've got my eye on: Liam Walsh against Scott Harrison, Lee Selby against Corey McConnell, and Brian Rose against Joachim Alcine. Which one are you most looking forward to out of those three fights?
I'm fascinated by Scott Harrison against Walsh. I really am. I don't know. How much has Harrison got left? He looked okay in his first comeback fight. Far from impressive in his second one. And this is a huge step up for him. I mean, and when was he last fighting at a decent level? You've got to be going back best part of 10 years, haven't we?
Quite possibly, yeah. Quite possibly. I think out of those ones, obviously I'm intrigued by Harrison Walsh. Absolutely intrigued. Being intrigued to just even go to the weigh-in for that one.
Yeah.
But Alcine Rose, I think, is a really interesting fight. Really interesting fight. I think Alcine's been caught cold a couple of times and caught early, like by the likes of Matt Macklin. But if you let him get in a groove, any kind of rhythm, he's a real handful. And I think Brian Rose could really be up against it in Blackpool.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Alcine's certainly been brought over. Perhaps the perception is that he is more damaged goods than he really is. We won't know. It's going to look good on Rose's record if he stops Alcine. It's a step towards world level. But like you say, yeah, it's certainly you can't guarantee that Rose is going to win that fight, because if Alcine is as good as he has been at times in the past, and you know, perhaps the loss to Macklin was an aberration rather than the beginning of a trend, then perhaps we could see an upset in Blackpool.
Looking at Alcine, 3-1, quite a fancy it.
Yeah, it's good odds, 3-1, yeah.
And just a quick mention, Lee Selby, the Welsh Mayweather, as we coined last week, that seems to have caught on variously in various other outlets. He's up against Australian Corey McConnell. McConnell, massive 8-1 underdog. I think that's the biggest odds you'll get on anyone this weekend, which shows really just how highly thought of Lee Selby is these days.
Yeah, I mean, even if the odds were 100-1, I wouldn't bet against Selby. Selby has really, really impressed me in the last 2 years, or when he won the British title and he beat Stephen Smith.
Yeah,
Smith was really highly regarded at that point, and Selby was an underdog. But he's improved since then. He looked really tough, heavy-handed in that fight. But there's a slickness to him. To me, Selby.
He's a brute as well, isn't he? He's a tough man,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah. Out of all the British guys that are not at world level yet, he's the one that I would pick to go to world level and rule at world level. You think he's that good?
Do you think Eddie Hearn can make him a star, or do you think he'll just do it himself in the ring?
I don't know how much Eddie will have to do with making him a star. I think the thing is with Lee is you're shocked when you speak to Lee Selby after seeing him in the ring. He's not that flashy show off outside the ring. So I think Eddie will have to kind of try and bring that out of him a little bit. But he can do it all in the ring.
Yeah, okay. All right, so we're getting to your favourite time of the podcast, Matt. It's cheeky fiver time. You've got some odds there, sort of round by round odds, which you lamented not having in front of you last week. This week we've got a lot more choice. You know, last week it was all about Donaire and Rigondo. This week there's plenty going on all over the world. What fight is taking your interest in terms of putting your money where your mouth is?
Well, they're all interesting, aren't they? I think it gets things interesting if you do have a little bet on a few rounds, and you'll get the best value that way. So we've got maybe, I don't know, Tyson Fury in round 9.
You sound like you just plucked that out of thin air.
16-1.
Okay, so you're going to...
Yeah, that'll make for a happy Sunday in the boozer if that one comes in.
Do you think you actually will put a fiver on that?
I might do.
But you don't advocate betting in it anyway.
No, exactly. No, I don't. I don't.
I see you've got some interesting odds also down there. Just in closing, you know, what are the odds? What are some of the stranger odds offered by Ladbrokes at the minute?
Well, one that immediately draws your attention is Roy Jones Jr. and Steve Collins, which hopefully that doesn't happen. Roy Jones, incidentally, big favourite there.
Is he a big favourite?
Yeah, 6-1 on
okay.
Roy Jones. What else have we got? Guerrero, we've spoke about that before. Well, actually, Martin Murray, 4-1, they've come down. That's their shorter odds than I thought they would be out in Argentina, which I'm sure we'll talk about that more next week.
Yeah, sure.
But I was expecting him to be far, far more of an outsider than just 4-1.
Okay, interesting. All right, Matt, well, thank you very much for your time this week. Much appreciated. And I hope you guys have enjoyed listening. Next week, we will be looking back at this enormous weekend that's before us now, including Cleverley, Krasniqi, Alvarez, Trout, the return of Derek Chisora with a UK license, Scott Harrison, Liam Walsh, Joachim Alcin, Brian Rose, Alvarez, Trout, if I haven't already mentioned it, and Tyson Fury in New York. There's so much coming up. And we'll also be looking ahead to the big fight in Sheffield, Amir Khan against Julio Diaz. Also that night, Sergio Martinez against Martin Murray. And we've got the fight in America as well, Danny Garcia against Zab Judah, which I think is a slightly more interesting fight than people might be giving it credit for at the moment. So, anyway, appreciate your time this week and look forward to catching up again next week. Thanks for listening.
Get involved with all the best boxing banter at our forum, and that's forum.boxingnewsonline.net.